I did a lesson 4 weeks ago called Parenting 101. And then I did the second one in that series last Sunday night. I'll be doing the third one this evening. Sermon this morning is on the idea of giving honor. And there'll be information regarding parents and children, but I don't consider this to be a part of the series on parenting because parenting is not the central focus of the lesson. But having said that, honor is a very important thing in some cultures. I'm not sure it's taken as seriously today as it was a century ago in Japanese society at large. But in time past, the Japanese would rather die than surrender. This is part of Bushido, which is the code of honor and morals developed by the Japanese samurai. They would rather commit suicide than bring shame or dishonor to their family by surrender. This was learned by American soldiers in battles in the Pacific Islands during World War II. Webster defines the word honor as high respect as to someone's worth or rank, official dignity, to hold someone in public esteem, to give credit, fame, or glory. Vine's Greek dictionary defines honor as putting high value upon a person, esteeming them highly, and he notes that it includes financial support if needed. We'll notice this again later, but the fifth commandment says, honor your father and your mother. In some instances, a person may say, it's difficult to honor my parents when they have not been very honorable people. A lot of things God demands may be difficult. It's difficult to give up a life of sinning. It's hard to give up addiction to alcohol. It's difficult to gain self-control and stop giving in to uncontrolled fits of rage if you've allowed yourself to do that for years. It's hard to love your enemies when you've spent a lifetime giving in to hatred. Parents deserve honor simply because they are parents and God has put them in a position of authority over their children. A good example of this is seen in how David treated King Saul. The reference is to 1 Samuel chapter 24 and chapter 26. On two different occasions, King Saul took 3,000 men with him to find David and to kill him. In both instances, David had the opportunity to kill Saul, but he refused to do so. Each time, David later called out to Saul and told him that the Lord had provided an opportunity for David to kill him, but that David had not taken advantage of that opportunity. On the second occasion, recorded in 1 Samuel 26, verses 9 through 11, when David's men tried to kill King Saul as he lay sleeping, here's how David responded. He said, do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? David also said, as the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall go out to battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. King Saul was trying to kill David, but David still showed him obedience. He showed him deference. He showed him respect. He showed him honor because Saul was the Lord's anointed king. In Romans chapter 13, the Apostle Paul is talking about the fact that Christians are to be subject to the governing authorities. In verse 1, Paul says, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. It is in this context that Paul says later down in verse 7, give to everyone what you owe them. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. The New Living Translation renders that last portion, pay your taxes and government fees to those who collect them, and give respect and honor to those who are in authority. Notice that Paul does not hasten to add, Be subject to the governing authorities and give them honor as long as you consider them worthy of subjection and honor. We know the principle found in Acts chapter 5, where the governing authority known as the Jewish Sanhedrin reminded Peter and the apostles that they've been forbidden to teach about Jesus. And verse 29 says, Peter and the other apostles replied, "We must obey God rather than men." But that exception does not cancel out the overarching command to honor and to be in subjection to those in positions of authority. Speaking of the subjection and honor citizens are to show to rulers and the subjection and honor that servants are to show to masters, Peter penned these words in 1 Peter 2, verses 13 through 18. He says, "Therefore, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to governors as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, as free yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice, but as bondservants of God. Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the king." Then verse 18 says, "Servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh." When talking to wives, in the third chapter, 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, Peter writes, "In this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror." In the next verse, chapter 3, verse 7, Peter says, "Husbands, likewise dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." Addressing young people's attitude toward their elders, Peter says in 1 Peter 5, verse 5, "You younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility." Lack of honor, lack of respect for elders has been around for a long time. There's been disrespect for elders for as long as there's been men. Nearly 2,500 years ago, Socrates said, "Children have bad manners. They show disrespect to elders, and they love to chatter in the place of exercise. They have become tyrants, not servants of the household. They contradict their parents, and they terrorize their teachers." Sounds like yesterday's news, doesn't it? Significant to note that these children showed disrespect to elders, and they contradicted their parents, and they terrorized their teachers. I submit to you that if they'd not been allowed to contradict their parents, if they were in submission to their parents, if they had the proper respect for their parents, they would not have terrorized their teachers, and they would not have disrespected their elders. In the 19th chapter of Job, Job had lost everything, and he was covered in boils. He was an outcast from society. He talked about everyone looking down on him. And in verse 18, Job 19, 18, Job seems to indicate that it's a new low when he says, "Even young children despise me. I arise and they speak against me." In 2 Kings chapter 2, we see an example in ancient Israel where some young men made fun of, they mocked, they showed disrespect to the prophet Elisha. There are different views regarding the statement about him being bald-headed, but whether these young men were showing contempt for Elisha's age or whether they were chiding him regarding the prophetic office matters little. Because he was their elder, he deserved their respect. Because of his role as a prophet of God, he deserved their respect. The account is really quite enlightening. Reading from 2 Kings 2, verses 23 through 24. Chapter 2, verses 23 through 24. says, Elisha went up from there to Bethel, and as he was going up the road, some young men came from the city and mocked him. And they said to him, go up, you bald head. Go up, you bald head. So Elisha turned around and looked at them and pronounced a curse on them in the name of the Lord. And two female bears came out of the woods and mauled 42 of the young men. There's no indication that these young men were killed. But I submit to you, this gives new meaning to Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 3, where Paul says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Things would have been well with these 42 young men. They would have increased their chances of living long on the earth if they had given honor to whom it was due. Isaiah spoke of a day of judgment coming up on Judah and Jerusalem. And a part of that judgment would involve children being insolent toward their elders and the lowly being insolent toward the honorable. Isaiah chapter 3 and verse 5 says, the people will be oppressed, everyone by another and everyone by his neighbor. The child will be insolent toward the elder and the base toward the honorable, or the nobody against those who are honored. Part of the judgment would involve disrespect, dishonor, being shown to the ones to whom honor is due. He pictures the proper things of society being turned up on their heads, respect and honor being turned upside down. There would be a total loss in the sense of community, which would be shown by people not showing proper honor and respect to those of higher rank in society, and by children showing disrespect, showing no honor to their elders. Leviticus 19, verse 32 says, stand up in the presence of the elderly and show respect for the aged. Fear your God. I am the Lord. This evening we're going to spend a little time talking about child-centered homes. But the topic fits in with this lesson as well, so I thought I'd give a tiny dose of it here. Child-centered home is where the traditional, and we might say the biblical model of parents, is turned on its head. It's where the parental role of authority is flipped upside down. One website described child-centered homes this way. It said a child-centered home is a home where children learn to interrupt adults who are talking, use manipulation and rebellion to get their way, dictate the family schedule, take precedence over the spouse's needs, have equal or overriding vote with the parents, demand excessive time or attention, escape the consequences of irresponsible and rebellious behavior, speak to parents as though they are their peers, be the dominant influence in the house, be entertained or coddled out of a bad mood. The child perceives that the entire family exists to please him and to make him happy. I know this is going to sound far-fetched. I heard a preacher once tell of a story that he had heard. On one occasion, he repeated the story, indicating he, too, as I just indicated, thought that it was an exaggeration. He was in Tennessee at the time, and there was a lady in the audience that later said to him, no, that's a true story. My husband was at the home when it happened. Here's the story. This lady's husband was visiting and staying with the family for a few days, and they had a child who was maybe 8 to 10 years old. The child was allowed to do whatever he wanted to do. For example, they had used an interior decorator to put in nice curtains, and the child had torn them down. This man got up for breakfast one morning, and one of the parents had made some eggs, and the boy said, I don't want that. And the parent said, well, then what do you want? Child said, I want a worm. Parent went outside and dug around in the yard and found a worm. They brought the worm in and said to the boy, here's the worm. Boy said, I want it cooked. Put the worm in the skillet and cooked the worm. They offered it to the child, and the child said, I want you to eat half of it. The foolish parent ate half of the worm. Then the child said, I don't want it. I acknowledge this is an extreme example, but it demonstrates that foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, and that parents are being even more foolish if they let the children run the family. The following information is from a source written in the 1990s, so it's a bit dated, but it still shows the societal degeneration that occurs with this kind of approach, and it's especially interesting in view of the fact that acceptance of the child-centered approach to parenting really took hold in the 1960s. Wonder why, but that's... Top offenses in the public schools in 1940 were talking, chewing gum, making noise, running, cutting in line, dress code violations, and littering. In 1990, the top offenses in public schools were drug abuse, alcohol abuse, pregnancy, suicide, rape, robbery, and assault. William Bennett's Index of Leading Cultural Indicators makes a comparison of 1960 to 1990 in a few different areas here. There was an 80-point drop in SAT scores, a 400, and this is regarding school-age children, 419% increase in illegitimate births. And if that sounds like too big of a number, for example, if you take 3,000 and you go 419% added to that, or increase, it would be 15,570. So it's not like a gazillion. That number seems kind of large to me. 300% increase in single mothers, 200% increase in teen suicide, 560% increase in violent crime, 300% increase of welfare children. One thing parents need to be concerned about is that attitude is just as important as behavior. If the parent thinks that it doesn't really matter how the child acts, as long as they do what I told them to do, they miss something very important. We dealt with that in some detail in Parenting 101, so I don't want to revisit all that, but it needs to be revisited momentarily, because when you're talking about honor and respect, you're talking about attitudes. A child's attitude will guide his behavior. If the child is trained right, the actions, the behavior will also be right. If parents do not cultivate an attitude of respect and honor in their children, there will be a breakdown in the family. There will be a breakdown in every relationship, in every partnership, and every interaction those children encounter throughout the rest of their lives. I believe I was about 5 or 6 years old when I picked up a habit by observing some other kids interacting with their parents. It's been a few years ago, so some of the details escape me, but I remember sticking out my tongue at my mom when she said something I didn't like. I remember she made it quite clear that I better not do that again. Well, the next time I was displeased about something my mom had told me to do or told me not to do, I gave a moment's thought to it, and then I stuck out my lower lip. It became obvious very quickly that that too was unacceptable behavior. So in my defense, I hurriedly stated emphatically that I didn't stick out my tongue. As I recalled, she said, "No, but you meant to." My mom made it clear that attitude and intent are just as important as actions. Love you, Mom. As a parent, if you think nonverbal defiance is not a big deal, if you think that kids will be kids, then pay attention to what Proverbs 30, verse 13 says. Proverbs 30, verse 17, rather. The eye that mocks his father and scorns obedience to his mother, the ravens of the valley will pluck it out and the young eagles will eat it. The eye that mocks his father and scorns obedience to his mother. This is not referring to some negative, berating comment that the child makes. This is not talking about some physical display of defiance from the child. This is talking about an attitude. It's talking about a look. And if that gives you the impression that mocking and disrespecting and dishonoring your parents just by the look in your eye or by the expression on your face is something which the Bible condemns, castigates, looks down on, you got the right impression. Deuteronomy 27, verse 16 says, "Cursed is the one who treats his father or his mother with contempt." To the children and the young people in this audience, you need to be careful how you address your parents. You need to be mindful of the tone of your voice and what that reveals. You need to be cautious about the attitude you have in your heart, expressed or not expressed towards your parents and towards others who are older than you. It will affect your attitude. It will affect your treatment of others throughout your lifetime as well. And as parents, we need to be aware of the need to discipline, to guide, to train the attitudes of our children, not just their behaviors. Parents need to take very seriously defiant attitudes in their children. So we need to discipline, we need to train, we need to nurture the correct attitudes, and the behaviors will take care of themselves. But we need to realize that a child's attitude toward their parents will come largely from the respect that the child has for the parent. So once again, that brings us full circle back to the point that the parent must be honorable and respectable in order to instill honor and respect in the child. So parents need to put more focus and more energy on being sure that their own attitudes, their own qualities, their own character are all in harmony with the fruits of the Spirit. Instead of just focusing on teaching, scolding, and lecturing their children, it's not enough that their children know how they're supposed to act. They need to see the modeling of that behavior in their parents. Galatians 5, 22 and 23, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I've seen parents and grandparents completely overlook, just ignore egregious open defiance from a child, but then moments later come down hard on the child because he didn't use manners. Maybe the child didn't say excuse me after he burped. Fast forward 10 years when he's 18, he'll mug you, but if he burps while he's mugging you, he'll say, excuse me. The mannerly mugger has struck again. If we don't take misbehavior seriously in our own lives, we don't really take it seriously in the lives of our children. And so we will not train up our children in the way they should go if we are not really walking in that way ourselves. Once again, as goes the parent, so goes the child. Honoring parents is the foundation of society. The Ten Commandments are recorded in the 20th chapter of the book of Exodus, Exodus chapter 20. Concisely, the first four commands are, "You shall have no other gods before me, you shall make no idols, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, and keep the Sabbath day holy." These first four commands deal with attitudes toward God. The tenth command deals with attitudes and relationships with one's fellow man. We might say concisely that the first four commands teach us how to honor God, and the last six teach us to honor all others. And so after one gets his relationship right with God, then the very first step in getting along with others is to learn respect for authority at home. And so the fifth command is honor your father and your mother. That's the essence of the command. But notice the consequence that's stated regarding the command. Exodus 20, verse 12. Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Through the Holy Spirit, Paul expands a little on that when he says in Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 3, we read this earlier, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. If you want things to go well with you throughout your life, then honor your father and your mother. If you want to increase your chances of having a long life on the earth, then honor your father and your mother. The attitude you have towards your parents will affect every relationship, every interaction throughout your life. If you don't develop the right attitude towards your parents, if you don't learn to respect and honor your parents and your elders, you will struggle at work. You will struggle in your marriage. You will have problems with anyone who is in a position of authority over you. Remember these ageless, time-worn truths. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And as the family goes, so goes the nation. We've just been reminded why those things are true. Matthew 7, 21, Jesus said, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. Luke 6, 46, Jesus said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do the things that I say? John 14, verse 15, Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commandments. Can you be disobedient to those in authority and at the same time be obedient to God? Can you refuse to give honor to those in authority and simultaneously give honor to God? If children are not taught to honor and respect their parents and others whom they can see, how can they be expected to honor and respect God whom they cannot see?